Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Here is Dr. Vincent Medici, and I have three letters for you. DNA. Today we're going to go into deoxyribonucleic acid. Big word, but we're going to get it down to its simple component parts, and then we're going to put it into your health equation, because that's what we do. We take science, no frills, no gimmicks, no upsells, no upgrades, no nonsense, and we get straight down to how hard science can translate into your daily health regime. DNA. You can't say you haven't heard of it because you all got it in the seventh grade. Because in 1953, Watson and Crick, two 20-year-old biochemists from England, discovered the double helix, the double helical structure of DNA. That's one of two discoveries this century that rocked the world. And yet it meant nothing to you for many, 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 many years. Only Einstein, in 1905, with his theory of relativity, hit more popular heights. And those are the two theories, not theories. Those are the two, well, they were theories then, but those are the two insights into science, into the nature of everyday experience that have rocked the world in this last century. 20th, I'm referring to now, the one we just came out of. You had Einstein in 1905, Watson and Crick in 1953. Today we understand Watson and Crick and the beginning of an era, starting with understanding that DNA, its molecule is a helix. It's a spiral staircase interwoven with another spiral staircase. So you don't have to know a lot about science. You only have to know what a spiral staircase looks like. Because if you take one, if you take a spiral staircase and you intertwine it with another spiral staircase, you understand the structure of the DNA molecule. Now, in retrospect, it's all easy. Back then, to put that structure together, well, the best minds in science were working on it. And these two young upstarts from England got there first. Actually, if you read their literature, one of the reasons Watson and Crick got there first, if you're into that scientific stuff like I am, is because after every lab session, they'd go out and they'd go from professor to professor to professor, and they'd kind of like take everybody else's information, and then they'd go to the bar at night. And they'd sit in the pub, and they'd drink, and they'd talk, and they'd joke, and they kind of integrate what everybody else was doing, from Rosalind Frankel to Linus Pauling to just about everybody that was trying to get the DNA molecule studied and understood in terms of its structure. And Rosalind Frankel and Linus Pauling were close, but Watson and Crick got there first, probably because they integrated what everybody else thought and then provided their own spark of genius. Well, it didn't mean a lot in 1953, but today when we say forensic testing, PCR testing, when we talk about solving the crime puzzle because the perpetrator leaves a hair on the floor, when we talk about testing in utero, genetic testing to see that the baby's going to be okay, or in the future determining what diseases you're likely to get based on your genetic predisposition. When we dig up skeletons from 30, 40, 50,000 years ago, and we take their bones, and we study their bone structure under a microscope and we see what rotted out their bone, we can take the DNA fragments of their rotted bones and figure out what disease the person died of. We can determine how much arthritis, tuberculosis, syphilis, all sorts of diseases that occurred 30, 40, 50,000 years ago. We can see how much of it was around then. We can trace the entire evolution of disease in mankind as far back as we can find their bones. All because of Watson and Crick. The chromosome, the gene, the DNA molecule, it's got relevance. We're going to be cloning. We are cloning. We're genetically engineering drugs, better drugs. Antibiotics are just the past now. We're genetically engineering food, food in the high sense to make that food better. Now, we may not be doing that. There may be repercussions from it, but there's no getting around it. The application of that 1953 discovery, from that to mapping the human genome, that application has riveted the world. You cannot escape how it affects you every single day. The question I pose to you, the reason you listen to this show, the reason you tell your friends about this show, is because you have a sense that somehow, somewhere, someplace, there's a relationship to science and God. That there's a wisdom, there's a divine wisdom present in nature. That there's a connection between the intelligence of your cell and your soul. So there really should be a connection between that 1953 discovery and, as it relates to this show, natural healing. Watson and Crick and everything we understand about genetics and the genome is not at odds with natural health. It's put there by those same people, those scientists, those entrepreneurs, to further holistic medicine. So we don't have to talk about Watson and Crick and DNA simply as some high science that's on some level immoral, or some high science that doesn't relate to natural health. There's a hookup between the two. That's what we're going to get into today. The hookup between DNA and you in your pursuit for radiant health, in your pursuit to free yourself of chronic symptomology, freedom from disease. What do we have to learn from Watson and Crick? Little high school science. Got to do it. I'll make it simple. It's why you like the show. I get it down to something simple. So first, the chromosome. The chromosome. Chromosomal defects. We all learn it in high school. Very simple. I want you to think of a string of beads. A 6-inch string of beads. Very simple. If you're driving, you can visualize in your mind a 6-inch string of beads. That string has lots of individual beads. It's on a string. I just want you to take another string of beads and make an X with it. So crisscross the two strings of beads. That's a chromosome. That chromosome lives in the guts of your cell. That chromosome, that X-shaped string of beads, is in the nucleus of your cell. Done. There's all of high school genetics in one sentence. An X-shaped string of beads. Now, each of those beads is a gene. Yes, as in genetics, as in trigger. You trigger one of those beads on that string. You trigger it the wrong way. You express it the wrong way, and you have big problems. At the same time, another one of those beads on that string has to express those beads on that string. Each of those beads are genes. Those genes tell the cell what to do. And those genes may trigger when you don't want them to trigger. They may trigger or express or tell the cell what to do when they're supposed to, and then they can't turn themselves off. or those genes may work with perfect regulation. Those genes, those beads on that string, may work when they're supposed to work and not work when they're not supposed to work. This has everything to do with health. Everything. Watch what I do with this. We're going to spin this, as always, into something enormous relevant to you. Whether you're radiantly healthy, terribly sick, or just playing with symptoms that won't go away. Those beads on the string express, they don't express. They don't express and they're supposed to express. They express and they're not supposed to express. They're regulated. By what? Well, that's what the show's about. Genetic expression of those beads on that string. Now, if you take a bead, which is a gene, and you microscope the gene, you study it more closely, you're going to see that double helix. Those genes are long, 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 miles long, sequences of spiral staircases. And when we say DNA, which is what those genes are made up of, is single-stranded, we mean it's just the helix, just the single spiral staircase. But DNA really is a single spiral staircase intertwined with another spiral staircase, and that's a double helical structure, which, as we unravel a gene, we might find the string of DNA goes 50, 100, 200 miles. Some unbelievably, insanely long distance is this unwound DNA. And you hear these things, little fun facts in science. If you take the length of the spiral staircase in the bead, which is the gene, and you unravel it, it'll go on for miles. All true. Now, what's relevant about this? Well, that spiral staircase is made of component parts called nucleotides. Adenine, guanine, cytosine, thymine, in the case of RNA, uracil. Nucleotides, that's a word some of you are familiar with. And that string of DNA is a component of a sequence of nucleotides. And that sequence of nucleotides, guanine, adenine, thymine, cytosine, is bonded to the other spiral staircase. And that spiral staircase is another string of nucleotides. So adenine bonds to guanine, cytosine bonds to thymine, and the two are tandem. They're along each other like a ladder, but it's a twisted ladder because it's a double helix. And that sequence is one nucleotide after another, after another, after another, and each one is bonded across the way to another nucleotide in this twisted ladder that we call the double helix. You got it. I know you got it. You can see that in your head. That's all you got to see. If you can't see it, get on the website, straighttalk.cc. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, straighttalk.cc. Go on the website, into the top tabs, into the radio literature section. And Kerry, my wonderful webmaster, has put great pictures. If you can't do that, go into Google, go images in Google, and go to DNA. And you'll see hundreds of pictures of exactly what I'm talking about. You don't need me for the pictures or the data. You need me to string it together. That's what I do. I string it together. I think with it. And I encourage you to think with it. I interpret with it, and I encourage you to interpret with it. I ask you to be interactive with it. So this double helical sequencing, now here's the loop, is specific to the person. It's specific to the species. It's specific to the virus. All viruses, all bacterias, all parasites, all organs, all people, all animals, all living things have their own specific sequence. That's why when the perpetrator goes in to rob the jewels out of the mansion and he drops a hair of his head, onto the floor, doesn't leave any fingerprints, is in and out, but they get the hair. If that hair is in a data bank, if they sequence the genes in that hair, and they find out that hair is a human hair, and in some data bank, the government or some agency keeps a copy of that perpetrator's DNA, they can link the hair to the perpetrator. And that's forensic criminology. That's all over Hollywood. Because that's where we learn everything, from Hollywood. So you see this all the time. It's not anything new. If you've done PCR testing, Paul, Kat, Richard, PCR testing, that presently speaking, other than shrinking down to the size of the virus or the bacteria and hunting it out yourself, if some fraction of the genetic sequence of the animal destroying your body is shed, it comes out in your urine, your feces, your saliva. If we knew to look for it and we have that fluid and we break it down, of course, this is cost prohibitive. This is enormously expensive. Not too many people do this. But if you had to, if you had unlimited funds, and of course somebody, hopefully an American, but not necessarily, is going to figure out how to make what I'm describing right now very inexpensive someday soon. But if we had the technology and it was inexpensive, we could go in there and find in your body all those bugs that we can't find. We can't find them in your blood. We can't find them looking for them. They don't live in your blood. They excrete into your blood. They stay stuck onto things that we can't find in your body. And when they die, they fall apart. And they're remnants. They're sequences. Their special fingerprints comes out in your blood, in your urine, in your feces. We have to not do regular blood testing, not do regular urine testing. No, this is not what they do at Kaiser. We have to do PCR testing, which has been around quite a while. So that specific sequencing defines the microbe. It defines lots. And that we'll use a little bit later. Okay, now, let's do something with this data. Let's think with it, okay? In your cell, your heart cell, in your muscle cell, in your brain cell, in the nucleus of those cells, where's and why is the nucleus important? That's where the DNA is. The DNA is in the core of the cell. The DNA is the seed of the grape. I make that analogy all the time. A cell is a grape. Skin is the membrane. The guts of the grape are the cytoplasm of the cell. And the seeds of the grape is the nucleus of the cell where the DNA lives. In each cell, specific to the cell itself, different from the other cells, kidney, spleen, liver, heart, brain, each of those cells has a different sequence of DNA because it's got a different job to do. So the function of each of your cells is specific to the DNA in that cell. Now, for your cell to do what your cell is supposed to do, for it to accomplish what it's supposed to accomplish, that DNA, which is on the gene, and the gene is on the chromosome, and all of that's in the nucleus of the cell, they sit there and they wait, just biding their time, smoking a cigarette, drinking Starbucks. They just sit there and wait, like firemen. For an alarm, for a signal to activate. That activation comes when your hormones hit the membrane of the cell. That activation of the DNA waits for hormones, thyroxin, cortisol, adrenaline, growth hormone, estrogen, estriol, estrone, estradiol, testosterone, you name it. The DNA is largely interactive when the membrane of the cell binds some hormone. That hormone's part of the endocrine system. The glands make hormones, and we call that the endocrine system. But there's a word, I always use it on the shows, neuroendocrine. Concepts, there are concepts coming. There are concepts coming that relate to your daily experience of health. You want to get this. Those genes with those DNA strands, those double helical structures, are just drinking Starbucks coffee and hanging out. And they're waiting to be activated. And they're activated by hormones. Hormones are the product of glands. In relationship is the key to the neurological system. We say neuroendocrine. Bottle of Carl Legend. Free bottle of Carl. I did this before. Get on the website, straighttalk.cc. Where am I going with this statement? Neuroendocrine. Question. What critical part of the neurological system controls the glandular system? What critical part of the neurological system controls the endocrine system? Because that's big. Because if you want to talk to your DNA, because that DNA codes the life itself, you better have that part of your neurological system working. It better be patent. It better flow. If it doesn't flow, your DNA isn't interactive with your neurological system. Get to straighttalk.cc. Tell me what part of the neurological system, and then come pick your body of coral, pick your bottle of coral up. 8 ounce, the powder, the best. Time's up. The parasympathetic nervous system. You have to be connected to your body to balance the glandular system. So the glandular system works with intelligence and integrity. As it hits the receptor sites in the cell membrane to send its signal into the DNA to activate the DNA to do what the DNA is supposed to do. And what does the DNA do? The question is, what doesn't it do? It runs everything in the cell. It codes for all the processes of the cells. The DNA translates to the RNA. The RNA translates to protein synthesis. Protein synthesis are the building blocks of the cell. There's nothing that you can make. You can't make ATP. You can't build the cell membrane. You can't do anything. You can't make a lysosome. So we go neuroendocrine to DNA. DNA's on the gene. The DNA expresses. And its expression is specific to its sequencing, right? We talked about nucleotide sequencing. And that nucleotide sequencing codes the DNA to do exactly what that particular cell needs built. The sequencing in a heart cell is going to code the restructuring of that heart cell and the production of what that heart cell needs. That's going to be different than the sequencing in a brain cell, in a kidney cell, in a liver cell. The differences are minor because, of course, this is Homo sapien. This is your body. But the differences are critical. That's what allows individuality. If we want to grow, okay, if we want to grow a heart, we better have the DNA from a heart. If we want to grow a pig, we better have the DNA from a pig. And if we want to have a brain, we better grow the DNA from another brain. Okay. That's what we call optimal cell function. All the chromosomes are there. All the genes are there. The genes are regulated. The sequences of DNA are all molecularly configured in the right positions. Positionality, everything's next to everything. It's a perfect seating arrangement in the nucleus. Things run smooth. Now, when things break down, when those two ladders, those two sequences of DNA, those two spiral staircases, when they're not sequenced right, or when the nucleotide, adenine, thymine, guanine, cytosine, when those sequences aren't correct, when little bits of those molecules fall off, like they lose methyl groups, as in methylation, when the bonds to the other ladder, right? Two ladders, each with a sequence, those ladders are twisted into a spiral, but one ladder's bonded across the way to the other ladder. How about when those bonds break? Sometimes they're supposed to break. In meiosis, mitosis, those bonds break and rebuild. That's how cells multiply. If that's uncontrolled, you have cancer. Another aberration of the balance of DNA replication is cancer, but we'll get to that maybe later. Point is, right now, we're saying that there's a correct way to spatially orient these DNA strands, to rebuild their bonds, to make sure that the sequences are correct, to make sure that little pieces on those sequences through those nucleotides don't chip off. They got to be repaired. There's something called concept now, DNA repair. You're getting it? I can feel you. You're getting it. I know you're getting it. Now all of a sudden, DNA repair means something. Because it didn't mean anything before. I know that. I know that because I use these words all day long, and I look at your face, and I'm drawing blanks. And it's not your fault. That's not because you're stupid. You're not stupid. You're just as smart as anybody. And if anybody knows me, I sincerely mean that. But why should you have to go to a medical text and strum over lots of stupid rhetoric written by some guy that writes a book to give himself a name at a university? Why can't they just cut to the chase, skip all the baloney, forget the vernacular, the jargon, the nonsense, and truly try to teach you? Well, I could do another show on why academia doesn't appear to be able to accomplish that. But that's another show. Point is, you can get this, and you are. Now you're starting to understand what DNA repair is about. Like every other part of the body, it's breaking down. You can afford to have a little kink in the membrane. Some parasite hits the membrane, chews it up, lets itself in. Some bacteria, some virus glides right through. Some virus glides. It hitches a ride on some protein. That protein, the membrane opens to, and the virus hides on the back of the protein, gets inside the cell. There's lysosomes to eat it. There's glutathione to inactivate it. There's lots of things in the guts of the grape, in the cytoplasm, that are going to eat up that invader. That virus, that slithering snake of a parasite, that intracellular Lyme disease, that heavy metal, that dioxin, that pesticide, that prion, that nanobacteria. All these things that sneak on in through the membrane, get into the grape, the guts of the grape, the cytoplasm. But here's the point. If they get into the DNA, statistically speaking, you're going to have bigger problems. God made those bonds between the molecules of the DNA sturdy. They weren't made to be broken. There's a cost for not being able to repair your DNA. There's a cost for living in a world that breaks down the DNA at presently unprecedented rates. Accelerated rates that we did not evolve to handle. This is why radiation from computers. This is why radiation from cell phones. Ah, now you understand it. The cell membrane can't stop radiation. It can't stop the radiation on this computer. It can't stop the radiation on a cell phone. It can't stop the radiation from your microwave oven. Please throw it out if you're using one. Those radiations go straight to the DNA. It's a big reason why people are sicker than ever, and they are. We're not going to be pessimistic. We're not going to be pessimistic about that. But we're sicker than ever. There's too much pollution electromagnetically. The body is an electromagnetic machine. So if it gets to the DNA, you have bigger problems. But we were designed to repair DNA. Repair systems are critical. DNA repair. Once the DNA is not repaired, or once the DNA breaks down faster than we can repair, you have a big problem. Because now we're in the core of the cell. So when DNA repair fails us, because first, it gets hit so many times that it breaks down faster than we can repair it, we have an issue. And then if the systems in place to repair it do not work optimally, we have a double issue. The molecular bonds, and this is the next concept now. The molecular bonds are formed with a strength and an integrity. What you have to understand is if the number of hits, chemical, electromagnetic hits, deep enough to depose the correct formation in the DNA molecule, actually occur and succeed at deranging your DNA, the energy liberated is tremendous. When you break a bond that's not meant to break, that's configured in a very stable way, tremendous amount of energy is liberated. You may say that's good. No, it's not really good in this sense. Because what that means then is that you have to supply a tremendous amount of energy to reconfigure that bond. See, that's the catch. If you have a bond, a chemical bond, in a configuration that provides you benefit, and that bond is broken, that stabilization, that release of energy, makes the next bond tougher to reconfigure. It's tough sometimes to reverse the bond, which means it's tough to fix it. It's tough to bump it back into the track it was in before it was broken. We're not talking cell membrane repair here. We're not talking a few cytoplasmic reconfigurations. We're not talking about rebuilding the mitochondrion. We're talking about the DNA. This is why when people are in serious disease, there has been very central core reconfigurations, deleterious reconfigurations of the molecular arrangements in the core of the cell, the DNA. Maybe the double helix doesn't have the same bonding angles. Maybe the tension between the weaker bonds has changed. All sorts of things we don't need to get into, but rest assured, it looks different, smells different, and if you could taste it, it would taste different. It measures differently. Make no mistake about it. If we put a microscope of sufficient quality into looking at DNA structure of a deranged, diseased organism, you're going to see alterations somewhere there are going to be horrible alterations that cause a loss of function. The DNA can no longer code for the proteins it's supposed to code for, and so your cell can't make what it's supposed to make, and that cell is part of trillions of cells in the organ, so the organ fails. You got it. So these consequences when the DNA can't repair itself. Serious consequences. You're not talking about a simple liver cleanse here. This is why the education is so important. If you've been told you've got disease, if you've been told you have chronic symptomology, if you know you've got something heavier, or if you want radiant health, if you're 70 and in 10 years you want to be 50 biologically, if you're 70 and in 10 years you want to be 50 years old biologically, then you've got to understand what I'm talking about. Don't listen to this show and say, but what did he say? You know, he illustrates the problem, but he doesn't tell us what to do. If you're asking that question, you want to listen to the show again and again and again and again because you're missing the point of the show. You're still in that herb symptom mentality. I just want it simple. This stuff here, you know, I don't have time for this stuff. Just tell me what to do. You want to stay at first base? I'll just tell you what to do. But I know lots of people that are under the illusion, the delusion, that you can just do a liver cleanse for what I'm talking about. You can just pop a few supplements in there. You have to see the need for a deeper, more fertile explanation of what's going on in your body. If you want to live 100 years, or if you want to get out of the deep, dark bowels of chronic illness. So here's this DNA then. We understand something about its structure. We understand something in terms of what it does, and we understand, we trust, that there's quite an issue when there's alterations in the bonding structures. And it's difficult to return that to normal. So we understand the challenge. If you understand the challenge, then you understand it's 2 years or 4 years or 5 years or 8 years. If you've been down for 20 years, you can understand how restructuring the guts of the cell can take a few years. You just wanted to be in and out in 3 months. A couple of programs, a little bit of advice, a hoof and a push. And you've got lots of people to tell you that. It's going to happen fast because we're the best. And this is my point. Yeah, there's some examples every now and then. But by and large, by the time you've broken down, you're looking at a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. You're going to fight. But that fight is glorious. And it's way more interesting if you understand what's going on. So there you are with this defrocked, defrayed, reconfigured deleteriously, this DNA mess now. And now you want to understand the next concept. The DNA is a crystal. That's right. I said it. Eventually, it'll come down the pipe. A few others have said it. Biophysics is teaching us the DNA is a crystal. Watson and Crick, they're giving us the material aspect, and that's huge. But that DNA is really a crystal. It's waiting to be hit with frequencies. The DNA is waiting to be hit with frequencies, vibrations, generating from the hypothalamus, the pituitary, and the pineal. You have to open up the higher self. Uh-oh, boy, we're making relationships now that are verboten. How dare we as scientists? And if you do, you're not a scientist. Make a relationship between the high self What's the high self? That's the person you know you really are. The high self is the person you know you came here to be. It's your potential. It's what your parents and your teachers and your church and your loved ones wanted you to realize, your potential. Until that potential is no longer just an empty word or a well wish, until that potential has translated itself into a higher frequency within the hypothalamus and the pituitary and the pineal and the cranial rhythms and the dural system and the fascial system, you cannot upgrade or talk to the vibrational essence of the DNA crystal. So guess what? It's not going to repair when it's been frayed, frocked, and betrayed. It's not going to repair quickly, if at all. You have to respect the crystalline nature of the DNA molecule. It's a double helix. It's the biggest thing come down the pipe in the last 120 years. Perhaps in the last 1,000 years. Search your own soul. It's crystalline. People are on this. They're not conservative scientists. They're scientific intuitives. Job of hard science is to translate that. If you can survive hard science, perhaps you will. But the point is, if you watch people heal disease, I have. Not often. Rarely. Rarely. For every person that healed something serious. I don't mean for every person that does a little cleanse and says they feel better. I mean a person that's out of the game. They're different. Oh, what happened to that guy? He looked 20 to 30 years older. I haven't seen him in a few years. No, those kinds. You check out, or you half check out. Or you're checked out, but you have just enough strength to hide the fact that you're checked out. Or you don't hide that you're checked out. You write a book about how checked out you are and hope that you can find other people that have checked out, and you all form a little community and go live in the woods. Whoever you are, if you're dealing with the heavier stuff, the stuff that I hope holistic medicine is grappling with, because it's not just about toenail fungus. If you really, really, really attuned to the reality that there are people, segments, larger segments than you think of the population that are barely making it, they have to understand that the DNA they expect to reconfigure, knock back, kick back into the track it's supposed to be in, to have it fully repaired. So the cell can be fully functional. They have got to understand that the DNA is a crystal, meaning it wants to receive a vibration. So let's put a few of the pieces together now. Her name is Marianne, and she has ankylosing spondylitis. Ankylosing spondylitis is a word to describe the fact that the cartilage is bone, that you grow bone instead of cartilage. And that bone instead of the cartilage ultimately solidifies the body, encases it with bone. The ribs are largely cartilage. When the cartilage in the ribs become bone, it's tough to breathe. Ankylosing spondylitis is rough. When you have lupus, lupus is an illness where the collagen starts to disappear. It rots out. Your collagen inflames and fibrosis. Its essential molecular structure reconfigures into one massive scar. You die of renal failure. You die of heart disease. Your face can disfigure. Your joints can disfigure. Cancer, I don't need to describe to you. But what we're really saying here, we're proposing a model. We're saying that when you're into illness where the DNA is not coding correctly for the proper, correct production of what the cell needs to produce so that the cell can do its job correctly, you've got to ignite the hypothalamus. You've got to ignite the pituitary. You've got to ignite the pineal. You've got to send a pulse through the neurological system via the glands and via the neurological system itself. You have to spawn a magnetic field sufficient to talk to the cell all the way through the membrane into the defrocked, defrayed, betrayed, and confused DNA discombobulated molecule to knock it back into a semblance of itself. It has an intelligence. It knows what it's supposed to do. That's a model for illness. That's a place to go. The DNA is a crystal waiting for you to ring its chimes. The DNA is a crystal waiting for you to ring its chimes. It's not just a stupid mass of atoms configured in a way that Watson and Crick figured out that everybody can clap about. It's not just a configuration that if we can study the sequencing of every living thing on the planet, we can maybe clone it. We can at least know that it's present, even if it's not there. It's not just a detective tool. It's not just a tool to make dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. The DNA is a molecule. It's a sacred structure. Why shouldn't it be a sacred structure? Who made it? Who made it? See, this is where the scientists get off the boat. We've decided that you can't say who made it. We've decided that it's irrelevant to say who made it. And we're going to pay that price. Worse yet, we've misdirected ourselves then into the opposite end of the spectrum. God made it. Therefore, what good is science? God is sovereign. Either direction there. Either direction. One part of the brain's not talking to the other part of the brain. There's a continuity between hemispheres of the brain. There's a continuity between God and science. Not to be torn apart. We made that mistake. We've made that mistake more or less depending on what age we are in history. We're in the age now where God doesn't mean much when we talk about science. It's okay to keep God in the four walls of the church. It's okay to say we're practicing Christians. We're practicing whatever we're practicing. It's okay to do that. It's okay even to fight wars over that. But to take it outside the walls of a church and apply it functionally to science, that we don't do. Functionally to science, it means this. It means if you're in natural medicine, if you listen to talk radio, if you listen to health shows, if you read health books, it means that DNA is a sacred crystal. Think about that. Drop that into your intuitive faction. Drop that one into the part of you that doesn't need to read every word on the page. Drop that part into the part of you that can read between the lines. There's something there. We galvanized the world, perhaps down the toilet bowl in 1953, because now we genetically engineer plants, and we engineer those plants to withstand higher concentrations of pesticides, and that we call a good thing. Because we can't stop the bugs, because if we stop the bugs, we'd have to rebuild the soil. Rebuilding the soil is costly. Rebuilding the ecosystem is costly. So if the plant is weak, it produces ammonia. Ammonia attracts bugs. Bugs eat up all the plants. To fix that would cost money. Instead, we genetically engineer the crop to be able to have its eyes pecked out by all sorts of little bugs. Then we make a stronger plant, because that plant can withstand more pesticide, we say. So now, to protect the plant from bugs, instead of engineering the soil, we simply make a plant that can take 100 times the amount of pesticide. And we give it 100 times the amount of pesticide. And then the bug stays away because the plant is drenched in pesticide. And we care little about the fact that you and I and everyone are going to eat that plant. And then we all pat ourselves on the back because we eat organic food. And then we go and we find that organic food might mean next to nothing. Then we get depressed. And then we feel like we didn't want to know any of this in the first place. So we go back paralyzed in fear because we've got to pay the rent on Monday. And we can't take the time to learn this stuff. It's a terrible cycle. And it begins when scientists don't respect God. It also begins when God-fearing people don't listen to science. So listen to this show. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health, straighttalk.cc. Yes, it gets better and better and better. Your job is to tell your friends about the show. Get them on. Get them to the website. They can listen to it in their car. They can listen to it live. They can listen to it on their iPad, their iPod, their iPood, and everything that's going to get invented over the next decade. They can listen to it. They can listen to it in Siberia. They can listen to it in Antarctica. We're all tied together thanks to the web. Concept. DNA repair demands autonomic patency. Concept. DNA is a crystal waiting for something to ring its chimes. Concept. New concept. The new concept is, if you're really sick, you don't pass go, like in Monopoly. If you're really sick, you don't pass go until you can bring up the cell energy. Concept now, cell energy. Listen to show number 71 on heavy metals and get hip to cell energy. Listen to show 101, which was a few weeks ago. Listen to the jingles about the cell, the intercellular space. Listen to the concepts about how cells throw out heavy metals, how they have to bring up the cell energy via intracellular glutathione. Listen to show 71. Listen to show 101. Listen to this show again to understand what I just said, which is, if you're really sick, you're not going to pass go until you bring up the cell energy. You can't repair the DNA until the overall energy of the cell comes up, which means if somebody tells you that an herb or some supplement is specially made to repair your DNA, you see, if you're being told that by many, many different companies, you have to understand the context of that statement. It means those supplements can be important. So we're not criticizing that jargon. But you have to understand the context of the statement. Take this to bring up the cell energy. Take CoQ10 to bring up the cell energy. Take lipoic acid to bring up the cell energy. Take glutathione to bring up the cell energy. You have to understand that the cell, the overall structure of the cell, the health of the cell, is a component of many, 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 many components that take time. They may take a year or 2 years or 3 years to bring up the cell energy necessary for the cell to receive the upgrade of magnetism from the higher glandular centers of your body, of your being. So let me say that again. That's a mouthful. If you're sick, or if you want to stop aging, if you want to seriously reduce it, if you have the time and the energy and the money to seriously reduce aging. And if you don't have the time and the energy and the money, well, you don't. And maybe in 2 years you will. Or maybe 2 years ago you did and now you don't. So it's all in context, right? But if you want to get out of the hole you're in as it relates to symptomology where the DNA is deranged, you have to bring up the cell energy, which is a component process. It's part of a bigger process. The cell is a factory. Inside its factory are hundreds of little factories. Each one of those little factories breaks down. The cell energy collectively dips below a threshold. You cannot receive then the upgrade of vibration through the neuroendocrine system. The cell cannot accommodate it. It cannot respond to it. It cannot transmit it. The cell has its own frequency driven by its own repair necessary to accommodate what you can generate off the neuroendocrine system. If you get that, you get everything. If you get this statement, you get everything. There's no bigger statement in medicine, fundamentally speaking. So do your liver cleanses. Do your kidney cleanses. Exercise. Sleep right. Listen to the Surgeon General. Eat from the four basic food groups. Do whatever you think you have to do, but understand what you're trying to do. You know why? Because if you understand what you're trying to do, you'll have the knowledge and you'll inspire yourself the faith to do it. 949-873-2127. 949-873-2127. Give us a call. If you care to make an appointment for some counsel, you're welcome to do that. If not, get to the website, straighttalk.cc. Come to the school. You students of my school, you guys rock. God bless you. Next week, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Ta-ta.
Been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.